This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
On Wednesday, Africa suffered a serious setback in its democratic gains as the aspirations of the people of Niger for constitutional democracy were subverted by an unconstitutional change of government.
That was Kenyan President William Ruto willing to assist Niger to democracy after this week's coup. Details coming up. Also, Vladimir Putin's hope for a big show of support at his Russia-Africa summit does not seem to have materialized. And Zimbabwe's High Court has barred 12 opposition candidates from next month's elections. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Niger's coup leaders said today they have dissolved the constitution and created a military group, the National Council for Safeguarding the Homeland, to run the country. They named General Abdurhamin Tiani as the council's president and new head of state. Tiani was the head of the presidential guard that shuttered President Mohamed Bazoum in his palace on Wednesday, declaring it ousted him, and because of bad governance and worsening security, they drove him out. The army has backed the coup despite growing international condemnation, including calls from the United Nations, United States, and former colonial power France for Bazoum to be restored to power as the legally elected president. France's President Macron today condemned the coup, calling it completely illegitimate and profoundly dangerous for the people of Niger and for the whole region. But Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of Russia's mercenary Wagner group, hailed the coup as good news and offered his fighters services to bring order. He described it as a moment of long overdue liberation from Western colonizers. Both the United States and France have small military operations in Niger used in combating extremist forces in the region. President William Ruto says under the auspices of the African Union, Kenya is willing to assist in returning the West African nation of Niger to democracy after this week's coup. James Shimanyula has more from Nairobi.
Kenyan President William Ruto spoke about the coup in Niger when he met Brian Nelson, United States Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, at State House in Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa.
On Wednesday, Africa suffered a serious setback in its democratic gains as the aspirations of the people of Niger for constitutional democracy were subverted by an unconstitutional change of government that deposed Mohamed Bazoum, a democratically elected president. Kenya is willing to assist in resolving the conflict under the auspices of the Africa Union, should it be deemed appropriate.
Ruto echoed calls from the African Union, the Economic Community of West Africa, the United Nations, and several nations for a return to democracy.
We call for the swift restoration of constitutional rule, ensuring the protection of the population, and a return to full civilian authority while upholding utmost respect for the country's institutions. The resurgence of military coups and attempts to subvert the will of the people on our beloved continent demands a united and global response to hold those responsible accountable for their actions. Let us stand together as one to reaffirm our commitment to democracy, liberty, and progress we have achieved.
However, his offer to work with the AU to mediate in Niger came after Sudan's army rejected his appointment to lead an intergovernmental authority on development in East Africa to negotiate peace in Sudan. Sudan Armed Forces leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan has accused Kenya of sympathizing with the rival Rapid Support Forces led by Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. Diplomats say the coup comes as Niger is struggling with grinding poverty and an Islamist insurgency. Mohamed Bazoum became president on April 2, 2021, after the country's first democratic transition of power since independence in 1960. James Shimanyula for VOA News, Nairobi.
With the situation in Niger still unsettled, I sought further clarification on the matter with Kweku Nuama, senior professorial lecturer and chair of the International Peace and Conflict Resolution Program at American University here in Washington, D.C.
The presidential guard usually are privileged and they are the closest to the president, but they were the ones who really took power, and now they have the cooperation of the larger military. And in the Nigerian case, there are a number of factors at play. Obviously, you have jihadists troubling the country. The government has not been able to respond to that. This is the case in Burkina Faso, where the military says, you can't solve the problem, so step aside and let's take over. But it's not different from the kind of arguments that even elected politicians like Buhari. Buhari came to power claiming that his background made him the better candidate to deal with the Boko Haram case in Nigeria. So we're seeing these cases where people are making claims to power on the basis of the inability of the current government to solve problems. And it's dangerous because it doesn't mean that the problems go away. The problems only get worse when you have a government that is now probably going to be hit with sanctions. This morning I was listening to the ECOWAS people. They're probably going to impose sanctions on Niger, and that will create enormous problems for the new military government. You also have international actors like the United States and France in Niger who are probably going to be dislodged now that you have a new government in there. France is losing influence all over Africa and is being replaced by Russia. So that I suspect that eventually, if sanctions hit this new military regime, they might turn to the Russians for support. Another factor, particularly in Niger, is the ethnic dimension. So the president has been removed, comes from a minority group, and that's always part of the political culture of these places, where people always think, well, you don't have a broader mandate, even though he won an election, because a lot of African politics breaks down into ethnic affiliations, as you and I have said in the past. When the state cannot provide things that people want or the things that people think they want, ethnicity becomes a factor in there. And so now you have a new government coming in promising to do better. Invariably, anytime you remove somebody on the grounds that they have not performed well, you are promising that you can perform better. Exactly. And I don't know if they can do that. And that's going to be a problem.
Professor, back in Niger in March 2021, there was an attempted coup when a military unit tried to seize the presidential palace days before Mr. Bazoum was due to be sworn in. So this is not new. And if the government is overthrown, it can cause major issues for Western powers who have invested in the country, with money and security. So how will that look as far as the president's removal right now for the Sahel?
Well, things only got worse and more complicated in the Sahel. And the Western powers who are still around in this area, they're being challenged and they've been replaced in some areas. They have to step up and realize that the game has changed. So if you are Niger and you have a government that is fragile, but you are hosting Americans and you're doing work with the French, you expect them to be able to help you fend off a coup. And if the Western powers cannot do that, they're going to lose allies across the board, because people are going to say, France can no longer protect me. Maybe I should talk to the Russians, because the Russians will come, the Wagner will come in, and they'll do all kinds of stuff. They'll commit human rights abuses and all kinds of stuff. But these relationships have to count for something. It doesn't help you if you are a democracy, but your country is so poor that you cannot deliver services. People are tired of just sitting there and saying that just because you won an election, everything is fine. I wish that were the case, but democracies have to deliver. They have to deliver services. And these Western powers that say we support these governments, they have to step up and help them. So I just don't understand how the United States and France could let an ally lose power to a presidential guard.
That was Kweku Nuama, senior professorial lecturer and chair of the International Peace and Conflict Resolution Program at American University. He talked to me from Washington, D.C. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Vladimir Putin's hope for a big show of support at his Russia-Africa summit does not seem to have materialized. Just 17 African heads of state, according to Russia's tally, showed up in St. Petersburg. That's less than half of the 43 leaders who participated in the first Russia-Africa summit in 2019. The list of notable absentees included the leaders of several large nations, including Nigeria's Bola Tinubu and Kenya's William Ruto, as well as Felix Tshisekedi of the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda's Paul Kagame. Many African countries share Putin's contempt for U.S. and European economic sanctions and have called on the West to lower its financial weaponry aimed at Moscow. But Russia's decision last week to pull out of an agreement with Ukraine to enable the export of grain and to then bomb Ukrainian ports, destroying thousands of tons of food, enraged countries such as Kenya, which lambasted the decision as a stab in the back. I asked Misha Gutkin, managing editor of the New York Bureau of the Voice of America's Russia Service, if the perception that the African continent as a whole is leaning towards Russia is a mistaken notion.
So I think it's a bit of a mistake to talk about Africa as a whole, because it's a continent that has, 54 countries, and they have different interests and different levels of development and different approaches to international relations. So yes, some countries whose leaders are not in Moscow are apparently upset at Russia's withdrawal from the Black Sea Grain Initiative. Other countries are more willing to listen to Russia's concerns, as, for example, the chairman of the African Union said, speaking in Moscow, that the West and African countries should listen to Russia's concern that led it to leave the Black Sea Grain Initiative. So I think it's a little too early to say whether Vladimir Putin was mistaken in thinking that Africa is going to lean towards Russia. And if he is mistaken, it's not for the lack of trying on his part. He is courting Africa. Today he announced a new round of debt relief for some countries. Yesterday he pledged to supply grain and other agricultural products to a number of countries. He also mentioned today that the volume of trade between Russia and Africa is right now $18 billion. And this is kind of interesting because it's actually less than it was in 2019 when the first Russia-Africa summit was held. And at that summit, Putin pledged that this volume of trade would double. Now, granted, in the intervening years, there was a pandemic that slowed down the international trade and all kinds of transactions. But still, that pledge that was made by Putin in 2019 did not pan out. And we'll have to wait and see whether Russia can fulfill all its pledges to African countries and continue its war in Ukraine without damaging its own economy.
And lastly, Misha, Russia has said it will continue to deploy Wagner forces in Africa, despite the Wagner group's boss, Yevgeny Prigozhin, mounting a failed mutiny last month. Any news on that front?
Yes, there is some interesting news. As we know, Yevgeny Prigozhin is in St. Petersburg and has been meeting with some of African representatives on the periphery of the summit. And this morning, there is an interesting recording allegedly by Yevgeny Prigozhin. It's not confirmed yet that it's actually him, but it sounds very much like him. And in this recording, he expressed support for the apparent coup in Niger, saying that this is also part of the anti-colonial struggle of the people in Niger and on the African continent. And taking that with the appearance of some demonstrators yesterday in Niger with Russian flags, this may be an indication that Wagner Group is very much interested in moving into this country where a political situation is destabilized now, even as Prigozhin's own situation inside Russia remains uncertain.
That was Misha Gutkin, managing editor of the New York Bureau of the Voice of America's Russian service. The African Development Bank says a number of factors caused real GDP growth in Eastern African economies to fall from 4.7% in 2021 to 4.4% in 2022, from the Kenyan capital Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
In its latest East African Economic Outlook for the region's 13 countries, the African Development Bank looked at drivers of the global economic slowdown: higher consumer prices, adverse weather conditions, mounting public debt, and currency devaluations. Nena Nwabufo is FDB's Director General in charge of East Africa.
The report undertakes vigorous and in-depth analysis by considering several global, regional, and domestic shocks, such as the effects of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on East Africa and the adverse impacts of climate change and political instability, amongst others.
According to the report, Ethiopia, Kenya, Rwanda, Seychelles, Tanzania, and Uganda are the highest growth, while Burundi, Comoros, Djibouti, Eritrea, and Somalia posted lower growth rates, with South Sudan and Sudan remaining in recession. Kevin Chikaurama is AFDB's chief economist and vice president for economic governance and knowledge management. He blames contradictory policies in the West for monetary problems in Africa.
While the contractionary monetary policies in the developed countries, especially in the United States of America and the European Union, have led to rising interest rates that are causing rapid increases in debt service costs, with stronger dollar leading to the devaluation of currencies in Africa.
Professor Njuguna Ndungu is Kenya's National Treasury Cabinet Secretary.
The report comes at a time when the world is faced with several challenges, such as the ongoing Russian-Ukrainian crisis, rising global inflation, and even political instability in some countries in the continent. These shocks, which have been persistent, have profound effects on our economies. When shocks are persistent, they create some permanent effects. And that permanent effect requires massive reforms to actually resolve.
This year, the thematic part of the report focuses on mobilizing private sector financing for climate change and green growth. Nwabufo gave more details.
Despite contributing less than 4% of the total global carbon emissions, African countries face significant climate financing challenges to respond to mitigation and adaptation requirements emerging from climate change effects. In 2020, East Africa could only cover 11% of its estimated annual climate financing needs of about US$67.2 billion.
This, Nwabufo said, highlights the significant financing gaps that exist for climate change and green growth in the region. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Zimbabwe's High Court has dealt the main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, a major blow ahead of next month's elections after barring 12 candidates and three others from running. Reporter Kudzanai Musenge has more from Bulawayo.
The ruling by Bulawayo High Court Judge Bongani Ndlovu followed an application by 12 voters in the Bulawayo Metropolitan Province seeking the nullification of the opposition candidate's nomination. They argued the local presiding office of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, acted illegally by accepting their papers after the deadline. Lawyers for ZEC and the opposition argued the case should have been thrown out. They said the applicants had no cause as they were not candidates, that the appeal should have been lodged with the electoral court, and that it was based on hearsay. The judge overruled them. CCC spokesperson Fadzai Maere condemned Thursday's ruling but would not immediately tell VOA what the party will do in response.
It's a dark stain on our democracy and confirms that Zimbabwe is a full-blown dictatorship. Obviously, the decision has nothing to do with the law because the 12 affected candidates were duly nominated to contest for House of Assembly seats in Bulawayo, and they filed the nomination papers well within the time limits stipulated by our electoral law, and this was confirmed by ZEC.
Bulawayo province is an opposition stronghold. However, the judgment means two rulings NUPF party candidates, including Finance Minister Professor Mthuli Ncube, will run unopposed. Attorney Ngqobisita Ndlovu, one of the lawyers involved in the cases against the CCC, said the decision was not political.
We believe that the judgments passed down are a vindication of the law and they are a vindication of the electoral process. We always argued on behalf of the applicants that this matter is not political, but it was simply a legal question of whether the nomination officer can accept nomination papers after 4 p.m.
United Zimbabwe Alliance Frank Mhlanga is an aspiring candidate also affected by the ruling. He said it was a shame and said the party would consult its legal advisors.
How do you come at the end of the race and declare yourself a winner when you are running in the race without anyone competing against you? And you call yourself a winner. This is a disgrace for our nation. We are becoming a laughing stock because of such things. And then at the end of it, we'll point fingers at other people and blame them for our own mistakes.
Lawyer Kutkapulu is a former opposition member of parliament. He told VOA that while the statutes allow an appeal, it would be futile.
One can always appeal if they are aggrieved by the results of a court process. But this thing being urgent, the elections being around the corner, the time within which to prosecute your appeal to finality simply won't be there. And the political wave will simply sweep everyone, such that legal processes at some point will be left behind.
Some critics of CCC leader Nelson Chamisa say the court case shows a problem with his leadership style of allegedly controlling the party single-handedly. They say the CCC candidates in Bulawayo filed their nomination papers late because they were waiting for approval from the party leadership in Harare. The CCC says it did not file late, and ZEC denies that it accepted late papers. Chamisa and his party justified their decisions by saying they are meant to ward off possible infiltration by state security agents. Some political analysts predict a tense election with a close race between Chamisa and incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, I am Kudzanai Musengi.
A Reuters tally of figures recorded by local activists and volunteer groups indicates the civilian death toll in Khartoum from Sudan's conflict may be more than double the official count for the capital. A health ministry report circulated to aid agencies and seen by Reuters put the total in Khartoum state at 234 dead as of July 5th. The report specifies that the data is collected only from civilian hospitals. But across the state, which includes the capital and its sister cities, Omdurman and Bahari, activists and volunteer groups have recorded at least 580 civilian deaths through July 26 from airstrikes, artillery and gunfire. A health ministry official told Reuters the official figure was the tip of the iceberg. The war has also injured more than 12,000 people and displaced more than 3.5 million, according to the United Nations, which has called it one of the world's largest humanitarian crises. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.